This is the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast, and I am your hostess, Natalie Ross. And for those of you who are new, welcome. This show is all about helping you to stand in your power as a conscious co-creator with nature and spirit. You are nature, you are spirit, you are consciousness unfolding. So what does that all mean? And this week's guest is the perfect guest to dip and dive into this topic because she is all about that. She runs The Numinous, which is a website that is all about how can we reconnect with the undefinable parts of being human. And her name is Ruby Warrington. And she's recently written a book, Material Girl, Mystical World. You may have seen it all over Instagram. And it's really a delightful book. I highly recommend it. And she's an all around just amazing being. And I'm so excited to bring her here to you today. And before we get into the show, I want to say a big thank you to Victoria Keene for once again connecting me with someone amazing to bring on the show. Thank you, Victoria. You're amazing. And for anyone who's listening, who's in the market for some beautiful sweatshop-free, really consciously made clothing with natural organic materials, then check out victoriakeene.com and look at Victoria's shop. She's got just the most amazing, beautiful psychedelic patterns on leggings and beautiful pillow things that you could put on your couch. And oh, I love it. Just check her out. Victoria Keene, you're amazing. Thank you. And thank you to all our Patreon supporters. If you have enjoyed this show and this, if our podcasts have helped you move through something that was keeping you stuck or struggling, or if we've helped you to feel like you belong somewhere, if you're not an outcast in society, then you can help produce the show and contribute $1, $5, $10 a month over at patreon.com/dreamfreedombeauty, and I'll be ever so grateful. And now for our show, I hope you enjoy this conversation with the sweet Ruby Warrington. Welcome to the show, Ruby. So hello. Exciting to have you. Yes, hello.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So before we begin our conversation, I want to invite everyone listening to, if it's safe to close your eyes, go ahead and do so. If not, leave them open. And turn your attention to your breath, your ever-present breath, the sacred tool you have that brings you life, and it brings you awareness, timekeeping, it brings you back to your center, it brings you into your oneness and your wholeness. And breathe in, allowing your breath to fill your lungs, allowing that life force energy to fill your body and your aura, and breathe out, allowing yourself to relax, releasing tension, letting any stress or de-stress you've been carrying around dissolve into this out-breath release. And take another breath in. And out. Allowing yourself to relax even further into the presence of this moment. And when you're ready, return back to an awake and conscious state. And I always love these moments just to, you know, remember that you can just take a simple 10 or 30 second break to come back to your presence and your oneness. Anyone who's listening, feel free to use this tool anytime you need it. Always returning to that breath that's there for you. And honestly, I want to just keep breathing and meditating. I'm like, ooh, yeah. I could keep going, but well, like,
that feels so good.
Like I could do that for like 10 minutes right now, but this is an interview. So anyone who needs to just pause and then come back.
Good point. They can pause.
Right.
You'll just pause for a minute, right?
Right. Exactly. Pause. So something is so silly, but I really want to ask you is, what are you wearing?
This is hilarious. So what am I wearing? Well, I was actually kind of thrilled when you said it wasn't going to be on video because it meant I didn't have to get dressed. So I'm wearing like navy blue tracksuit bottoms and like an American Apparel tank. That's it. Nothing
else.
No undies. This is kind of like how I spend my work day. And it's actually one thing I love about working for myself that I never would have expected as the benefits of being able to work for myself. But being able to wear like super comfortable clothes all the time and not have that pressure of like turning up somewhere, feeling the pressure to look and present a certain way, is just so liberating. It allows me so much more headspace to just kind of be creative and do my thing. I mean, of course, I get dressed when I go out to like do meetings or events and whatever, and that's fab. But most of the time I'm really like letting it all hang out. It just allows me to really kind of be in my creativity and inhabit my space, you know?
I totally know. And I am wearing, I'll share too, just I am wearing okay. my pajama pants that are very stripey and a shirt, a t-shirt that I slept in last night.
Nice.
Like, it is great to not have to get dressed. But you're known for coming from a background of fashion writing. You worked in the UK for the the Sunday Style magazine, and mm-hmm. this was your world, and now you're mystical Ruby with like, let's hang out with crystals and do crystal meditations and party sober and all this uh-huh. stuff. And I think it's really interesting to witness someone going through this transformation from like, hey, wait, there's something more to this than just the appearance, and to essentially take off those appearances and emerge as your true self, but still own the beauty and power of fashion and style and all these material things. So it's like, it's fun. I mean, your book says it all too. In just four words, your book is and I'm sorry, I always get it missed. I always say it backwards. Material Girl, Mystical World. I think I said it right.
You said it right. And okay. lots of people say it backwards. Well, yeah, quite a few people say it backwards because I think people are like, but you're a mystical girl and this is the material world. And it's interesting to me. You can say it both ways. It's relevant and it makes sense in both ways. But I guess the implication in the title, like you said, is that I always identified, even subconsciously, with very materialistic markers of success and fulfillment, I suppose, pursuing a career in fashion. And then within that career, really kind of working hard to get a title on a very high status kind of magazine, and really immerse myself in that kind of world of design and high fashion. And yeah, like you said, it was about 15 years into my career, but kind of like 2 years into this dream job that I had landed myself. Made it sound easy, that I had worked tooth and nail for.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That I really kind of found myself looking around and going, whoa, oh no, this isn't it. I thought this was it, but it's not. Because inside, all I was feeling was this deep and ever increasing and ever more urgent sense of like, oh, I'm not fulfilled. This isn't everything I'm here to do. And I had kind of like had that in my sights for so long as everything I thought I wanted. And so it was a really kind of discombobulating moment, yeah. you know, of like, oh, and I think that it's, you know, it's not necessarily uncommon. And I was actually speaking to a friend who's a modern shamanic practitioner who worked in the finance industry in London and now works in the healing space. And she was saying that lots of her clients actually, who similarly, you know, working in finance, you can't actually get more materialistic really than that. she's like, a lot of people, when you attain all of the material things that you had as your kind of like your goals in terms of a successful life, is often when people have this kind of like breakthrough, uh-huh. spiritual awakening of like, oh no, this isn't it. Okay, so what is it then? And then begins for the more open-minded or the more curious, an investigation into what really is the meaning of fulfillment. What does it mean to live a really holistically satisfying life, you know, and that's certainly what led me to creating the Numinous, which is now, so yeah, it bridges the world, it bridges the divide between, the apparent divide between those two worlds, you know, because like you also said, what I saw was a gap in the spiritual space for a platform or a voice really that spoke to the fact that actually, yeah, it's still great to have beautiful things and to aspire to surround ourselves with wonderful objects and even to want, you know, high status and like to want to be recognized for our work. That's fine. But when it's not fine is when it becomes completely out of balance and that's all we're focused on. And that's when we can find ourselves feeling, well, getting physically and mentally sick, you know, and find ourselves really struggling with things. So addictions particularly, because I think a lot of addictions come from that sense of like, oh, this wasn't it, but I thought this was it. So I'll try it again just to make sure. You know, and you can kind of get into this addictive cycle with things as well. If you don't snap yourself out of it. And begin to look for the inner satisfaction, the inner fulfillment that comes from really establishing a very deep and true connection to what we, many of us, define as our spiritual self, but which I also kind of define as just my sense of aliveness and my sense of my inspiration and my spirit, my soul.
Right. And you mentioned people attain, this is a story that I hear again and again and again with guests and with people I talk to, is that attainment of this perceived goal of success, when I attain this then I'll be happy. But then you said it so well, you get there and you're like, oh, this isn't it, but then what is it? You know, that's the big question. And and then I think you've just like zipped right through that and told us what it is. So there you go. But
but it's different for everybody, of course, you know. I loved writing and researching and investigating and telling people stories and all of the those elements of my career, you know, because I didn't just write about fashion. I was a featured editor, so it was lots of lifestyle subjects, and I really enjoyed all of that, and I still really find a lot of fulfillment through pursuing that kind of work. But it's just the subject matter that's shifted for me. But I guess a lot of people might find it through continuing in their career, but like really dedicating themselves to philanthropic work, or, you know, finding some other way to connect to what it really means to be here and participate as a human, you know?
Right. A human.
A human.
We are all human beings. So something that is, I think that the pendulum can often swing really far in the other direction too. Someone will go, oh, I attained all the material, but this wasn't it. And they go and they try to like essentially dissolve themselves, their being, all their possessions and even their ego. And they want to like return wholly to spirit. But something that I've been thinking about more and more, and that I observe in your path, is this idea of we are, if you're living in this idea that we are one and we are whole and we're all connected, then of course the material is the divine and the spiritual is the divine. And how do we walk that line where we can be in that material world with that spiritual undertone or integrity or intention that guides us through high fashion or through being a doctor or through being a mom or whatever it is.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that, like you just, we're all human beings, right? We all have a body, whether we like it or not, whether that feels restrictive and kind of full of suffering and painful and all of those things that sometimes I think it can be tempting to want to escape from through a very kind of like purist pursuit of a spiritual life or spiritual practice. And I think actually part of our work, particularly in the times that we're living through now, is to really be here on earth and to address how we are here on earth. And that means being in our body. It means interacting with the material world. And I think there's actually a huge responsibility on people who are awake to this conversation now, to actually, in whatever way we can, begin to influence the way that, you know, finance, commerce, capitalism, these systems are actually operating. So I think that actually it becomes, well, for me, it feels very important to still to keep a foot in that world so that I can use my voice and my influence to whatever extent I have influence to really begin to sort of like hopefully shift, make some shifts within those materialistic systems that live and that govern us and that we're to a large degree forced to live within, you know, and to exist uh-huh. within. So I actually think that, yeah, that's kind of where I've landed on with a lot of it. But then there are things like, you know, in terms of the more materialistic pursuits like following fashion, etc. I think it really comes down to, and I think it's a very important for us all now as well to be super aware of our consumer choices. And so for me, for example, this year I've committed to only, and it will probably continue beyond this year, I'm doing an experiment to only buying secondhand and vintage fashion. And I think for coming from the fashion background, I can now look back through this new lens and be like, wow, like there was a thing on, and you know, beautiful, but there was a video on Vogue.com today celebrating the solstice, and they've got models in all these gorgeous dresses out kind of on a beach, like having a fire, and it's all this stuff about connecting to yourself and your sense of spirituality. And I'm kind of like, yeah, this also kind of means like really paying close attention to where those clothes were made and how they were made mm-hmm. and all these things, you know, which I didn't necessarily consider or shamefully in a way, didn't really spend that much time thinking about when I was very entrenched in that world, but have become more and more important to me on this path. And so I think that, yeah, like I said, it feels like it's very important for there to be a more sturdy bridge built between the two worlds, because like I said, whether we like it or not, we live it, we are existing in this world, and this world really needs some help as we move forward, you know, and some really consciously awake people gaining more influence and hopefully, yeah, helping shape the way things play out over the next few decades.
Right. And any area where there's, you know, areas where there's more unconsciousness and more of that essentially wasteful and not sustainable source, and even, you know, harmfully sourced work or materials or anything, labor, such as certain fast fashion or anywhere that's, you know, places that are just like have the most, I don't want to call it corruption, but kind of like unconsciousness, or they yeah. are also the places with the most potential for us yeah. to come in. Like finance, you mentioned, is a big, yeah. it's huge.
Huge, exactly.
So huge. And food yeah. and the way we eat. Like there's so yes. much potential in all
health.
Of these areas.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear from someone who's got such an inside perspective, what would, and I know fashion isn't your main thing anymore, but I think it's really curious to think about this. Mm. What would a conscious fashion industry look like?
Mm. Well, it's when I said, you know, I'm only buying vintage and secondhand clothing, mm-hmm. I will add into that that if the brand is like, you know, Victoria's stuff is all I know. Sorry, our mutual friend Victoria Keene's stuff,
yes.
who introduced us, her collections are all ethically sourced, handmade, dyed with flowers. I mean, you know, this is, yeah, I'm gonna go there, of course. But I think, yeah, I think it would be really great if there were industry regulations that actually helped people and helped brands to create, to use more ethically sourced materials, for example, in terms of pricing and things. Because I think, obviously, with many of these corporations, it comes down to doing things as cheaply as possible.
Yeah.
But also I think there's a huge, living in New York, there's an amazing consignment fashion scene here that I've got really into. And I think more swapping, sharing of clothes, more recycling of clothes. I love what Reformation do with their whole remade collections. I just saw another report on a designer who's kind of all their collections are made from recycled army clothing. So I think that a lot more recycling, as we see in other areas, would be a really cool thing for the fashion industry to get on board with as well. But it, yeah, I mean, it's so, the fashion industry and the way it's structured is so set up to consistently make you buy new things.
Yeah.
having a conversation about how you can still create items that feel new and exciting, but that are not only sustainable, but regenerative in terms of the environment would be a really great place to start. You know, if there are more designers who could get on board with that conversation, I think that'd be fantastic. I know, for example, I don't know if you've heard, there's a label called Vetements. That's the kind of like the bad boy designers of the fashion industry at the moment. Like all the cool kids are really into it. And they're very interesting. I'm kind of researching a story to try and paint them as kind of like secret mystics.
Nice.
Because they recently announced that rather than show 6 times a year, which is what most labels do now to hit up all the, so that there's consistently new stuff in the stores, mm-hmm. they're only going to show twice, and they're actually going to show in the season that's relevant. So they'll show their fall collection in the fall and it'll be on sale straight away. They also make the bare minimum, and they often very regularly sell out of lines, which is one of the things that's made them more appealing, I suppose, because you have to be quick to get the stuff, but they don't want to have any waste.
Yeah.
They recently moved out away from Paris, so they didn't have to be part of the whole kind of like media thing. They moved to Zurich so they can spend more time in nature and meditate more. And I just think, yeah, they're forerunners of what I, the way I hope more designers or more people in the fashion industry may go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a big subject.
yeah. And it's a theme from that, from, you know, fashion to food seems to be slowing down, and there's so much rush, rush, mm-hmm. rush, hurry, 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 mm-hmm. now, buy more. Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. ooh, let's slow fashion in a sense, exactly. Slow food and
yes.
sourcing and just, things.
Exactly. Who knows which way consumer behavior will go, but from the circles that I move in the conversations I have, just from kind of like reading and speaking to trend forecasters and things, the idea of, there's a guy who wrote a book actually that came out last year called Stuffocation, uh-huh. that was really good. And it was about just generally people feeling so overwhelmed by the responsibility almost that comes with owning so much stuff. That people, you know, trend reports are seeing how people are actually really embracing kind of the idea of less is more when it comes to just consuming endless more things, which I think is a really interesting one, because then when you're consuming less things to bring fulfillment or excitement to your life, you're obviously going to start looking elsewhere for those properties, mm-hmm. which is when, yeah, some people may come to a more sort of like spiritual or, inward looking way of seeking happiness, fulfillment, etc. through that route as well, which I think is really interesting.
And actually something you have experience with, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I read, is you had a difficulty with shopping, with fulfilling your needs through shopping, and you reached a breaking point where you were like, this is not fulfilling me. Is that true? Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it wasn't, I'd never really had a problematic kind of like shopping addiction or anything.
Not like TV level.
no, exactly. But I think that in a way, working in the industry I did, I was given a lot of free clothes and things. So there was constant new things, even if I wasn't like out maxing out credit cards and getting myself into trouble with it, you know? Mm-hmm. Which I realize sounds ridiculously privileged and is kind of gross, but that's the way it is in that industry also. So I guess I kind of, and I guess it's been more of a sort of slow realization and just slow stepping away from like, oh, actually I don't need all these things. And actually I don't even really want all these things, you know,
uh-huh.
and just really spending much more time appreciating what I already have, and actually really kind of like, yeah, just before buying new clothes or before even thinking about having new things, just really getting conscious again, like doing a pause like we did at the beginning of this call and being like, okay, let's actually think for a minute about when I'm really realistically going to wear this. Yeah. Whether there's something else in my wardrobe that can do the same job already. Yeah. And by the time I've asked a few more questions like this, it's kind of like, well, actually, no, I don't need to spend whatever $100 on that thing. You know, I can carry on about my day and love what I've already got.
Yeah. And your experience with it not being like a maxing out credit cards or being so dramatic is, I think, really could be eye-opening for someone listening who maybe doesn't think they have a problem with some of their spending because it's not at that point, but doesn't have to be at that point for it to be something that's coming from a place of lack or a place of needing to fulfill something that can't fulfill. Addiction, essentially.
Exactly. Something really interesting that I began to notice, and this is all, I think, just as a result of cultivating more mindfulness practices like meditation, yoga, when you can really begin to kind of like observe your thoughts in real time on a much more consistent basis. But I really began, so working from home now, like I said, I spend most of my time in kind of like track pants / PJs and whatever. And I go in, rather than going into a city or an environment where I'm surrounded by stores all the time, I've really begun to notice that when I go, like anytime I go to Broadway in Soho in New York, which is kind of like where all the big stores are, I'll almost find myself automatically like walking towards Zara thinking, I'll just go and see what they've got. It's like I'm on autopilot. I don't actually do it anymore, but it was about a year and a half ago I became so aware of how I was, there was this, like I said, like an autopilot that would switch on if I was in certain environments where I'd be like, right, now it's time to go and buy something new, whether I needed something new or not. So I've really sort of been able to, having become aware of that, kind of work with working around, or just kind of ignoring that impulse to the point where it doesn't really happen anymore, like overriding the impulse, you know, which is like kind of similar to how you might overcome any kind of addictive behavior, I suppose, you know, you just kind of consistently override the impulse so that you make new neural pathways in your brain. And being in a mall or being near a mall doesn't automatically mean I'm gonna buy something new today, you know. whether I need it or not,
right? Oh. I want to get more into your personal story too, of some of your mystical experiences. Even though you're the material girl in a mystical world, I'm sure you've had some mystical experiences, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. That's what I mean. I mean, I think that what I like about the title being that way around is that the world is inherently mystical.
Yes.
We have just, as humans, created all these systems that we live by, but actually if you remove those, the world is like, we can't explain the great mystery of the universe, you know, it just is. So the world that we are materialistic beings living in a mystical world.
And our very, go ahead.
The way I see it.
And our very material existence is so mystical. Like, what? How did we get here?
Exactly. How did we get here? How does my body work? Like, why does my heart keep beating every day for like 90 years?
Yeah.
Like without stopping, like, you know, it's, there aren't answers.
So do you
no
have,
science.
Right. It's the great mystery, the paradox and the mystery, and just get comfortable with it because it's here to stay.
Exactly.
So do you have a story of a time when perhaps this mystical essence of the mundane real material world came into view for you, when that suddenly shifted, or was it more of a sort of slow burn into this awareness?
Well, I think that as a kid I'd always been super tapped in, always had an extremely active imagination, what some people in my more now age circles might call my intuition, I suppose. And I just had always had fairy stories playing in my head, always, for as long as I can remember, been fascinated by astrology and what that meant. And it's something that I grew up like in my mum was a bit of a hippie, and so we grew up eating macrobiotic food, living in the countryside. I spent a lot of time just outside in nature, and that was my kind of early upbringing. And I think as I got older and sort of, you know, the desire to fit in and the desire to look a certain way, etc., all kicked in. I put all of that stuff further and further, stuffed it further and further into the closet, I suppose, and just kind of like came to ignore it all and focus on, like I said, this very materialistic career path. So I guess the reawakening of that came when I, yeah, like I said, when I was at this job and was just deeply unhappy, and I was kind of thinking about, well, what can I do that's going to be just something like a passion project or something on the side that I can just get inspired about again? And that's when I began to study astrology. I was like, what would be the thing that I could just talk about endlessly to anyone who'll listen, like whether they're really paying attention or not? I was like, astrology, actually, I've always loved it. And they already in the office called me Mystic Ruby because I was like the girl who would tell everyone when Mercury was in retrograde, and I knew everyone's like Chinese animal signs and everything. So I kind of began studying astrology with our resident astrologer, Shelley von Strunkel, who was this amazing kind of mystical maven, and had traveled the world and spent time on ashrams and was really, you know, knew so much about all of these different, mainly Eastern, like religious philosophies and mystical traditions, I suppose. And she would just tell me all of these stories and introduce me to all these books and things. And it was literally every meeting with her was like, oh yeah, like, aha, yes, that's right. This is what really lights me up and inspires me. This is what it's all really about, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was like going through that process, and that through that process, I had the idea to create the Numinous, my website, which my book is based on. So yeah, I think it was kind of always there. But in terms of like an experience when I've actually felt like I've experienced that connection to the mystical world firsthand, mm-hmm. I've had many through my research in both the book, but also just writing articles for my website, have many kind of pretty out there healing sessions and experiences here in New York. And things like doing, I don't know if you've ever done breath work, that always is super sort of psychedelic, mystical experience for me. I had something called a medicine reading with an amazing healer called Deborah Hanekamp. She goes by the name Mama Medicine, and she's actually one of the few Western women to have trained with the shamans in the Amazon. And so she's devised a treatment. It's like a 2-hour treatment that includes Reiki and energy work and sound healing and different essential oils and all kinds of crystals, and it kind of all combines. And she sings, and it's just, I mean, I was actually discussing it last night with a friend who'd also had it, and both of us were like, wow, you come off that table just like having gone to somewhere completely different. And when I say gone to somewhere to completely different, in both those mystical experiences, and I've had similar experiences in yoga classes actually, it's more like you're going, rather than going out somewhere super cosmic, it's more like going, for me, the sense of going more deeply into myself, mm-hmm. and realizing that there's just this kind of like incredible depth of understanding that is completely beyond words or beyond measure. And sort of touching base with that is for me a connection to the cosmic. That's a connection to the divine.
Right. Getting that sense of, oh, this is me, and I mm-hmm. am so much mm. more than what I thought because, I was.
Exactly. And it's like so many times those experiences will involve like really deep-seated memories resurfacing, or even kind of like future visions, or, and it just kind of, it brings home how all of our experience really is within us and is accessible to us, but it's kind of in this space that doesn't actually exist. Like, we can't see it or measure it or put a label on it. It's there and it's in us, but it doesn't even exist. And that for me is like, can you really get much more mystical than that? You know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think that the fact that you can't measure it or touch it or see it, you can only feel it within you, and that's it. You can try to convey it through words or sounds or things, is why it's been so cast aside in our society.
Mm, exactly, because it can't be quantified, and therefore it can't be, there can't be any value, material value placed on it mm-hmm. either. So yeah, I think that, I mean, I do touch on in my book how I do really believe, as many people perhaps do also, that, you know, subjects, numinous subjects, practices of divination, our connection to that kind of divine that's outside of anything like organized religion has been deliberately suppressed by the systems that exist now, to keep our kind of material world ticking over and keep it profitable.
Yeah, and it's so weird, like, in that I always wonder how deeply sick must the protagonists of this be, or I guess antagonists, I don't know, depending yeah. which way you look at, but like, how deeply sick those who continue to consciously suppress that must be, to see that the power they seek is so not fulfilling. It's like the greatest expression of addiction.
Yes, that addiction to power, exactly, an addiction to control. And yes, absolutely. And I can imagine a lot of the time it's utterly subconscious, and that's the extent of the sickness. You know, it's utterly right. subconscious and unknowing. And that's what we're all here to do something about.
So do you? Yeah, right. Do you think that because I know as individuals it can often seem like a daunting task to face such an opponent as the mm-hmm. patriarchy, but mm. even in these words it's putting an us and them and othering them, but just for the sake of explaining this, you know, we are all one, but it's also daunting to be like, holy crap, how does little old me face this deeply entrenched society that's been going on in this way for thousands of years? And so do you believe it really is in the hands of individuals to wake up and take action and exert whatever influence they might have into reawakening that oneness? Is that, you know, do you have any further insight on that?
I mean, that's kind of where what I've landed on. I think that's all we really can do, you know. I think that it will take one individual at a time, and each individual voice to be heard, and each individual to express that desire, and to do what we can. Like I said, I mean, I think that with our consumer choices, if you think about, you know, as an abstract context, like our, like money is energy, money is love, then where we place that, what we choose to do with that, is actually a very important political act right now. So yes, I do think it comes down to each individual person. And, you know, obviously we see huge amounts of, well, we hope, progress made when certain individuals who manage to have a louder voices and a bigger platform can really use those to influence perhaps more people or to bring more consciousness to light. So hopefully more and more of that will happen. And I think we're seeing that, you know, in this, what I call the now age, which really talks about the age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. So the age of Aquarius being what the new age of the 1960s was referring to. Many of your listeners may know about this, but obviously we began transitioning from the Aquarian age of Pisces, we collectively, like as a globe, during the last century, and have been transitioning into the age of Aquarius. Like in the song. And we're kind of depending on what you read, and there's lots of different thinking about it, but we're more and more fully in the age of Aquarius, which is why I call the new age the now age, because it's kind of like, well, it's not new anymore, it's now, guys. But one of the traits, I suppose, of the age of Aquarius is the rapid advancement of technology and the sharing of information, which are both areas ruled by the astrological sign of Aquarius. And I think what we're seeing now is an incredible opportunity for multiple and diverse voices to actually be heard and to have an impact through the incredible technology that we have at our fingertips, and the way that we can spread information and build our own platforms and build our own audiences. So I think that, you know, really conscious use of social media and of of the internet is a very valuable part in this evolving back to oneness, the oneness, exactly. So yeah, I think that it does seem super daunting, but let's not forget the power, that there's power in numbers, and that the more of us are on board with it, then the more impact we can have, and the wave will just get bigger and bigger.
Totally. And something that I love about this, that I know we talked about a little bit before we got on the call, the recording, is as people like you and I and our listeners and our readers and our followers and our audience and our communities wake up and start sharing their insights or sharing their gifts or whatever it is. And as we connect, it's so awesome because, and I'm like getting chills, I'm gonna cry. It's so awesome because we inherently, in the way that we do things in this community and in this now age, is connection. And it's no longer each man or woman for himself. We're like, let's wake up and support each other and let's connect. And as we each wake up, this collective isn't another round of the lone wolf. This is a new thing that we're creating each and every moment. Like right now we're creating it, and it's awesome and powerful.
Yes, and we must not forget the impact that this can have. You know, it's really interesting. Like when my book was coming out, I was trying to get magazines and publications, many of the kind of more old school media, I guess, to write about it. And a lot of the times the answers I would get were like, it's a little bit out there. And, you know, a little bit cynical about these kinds of things. I was a bit like, ah. But then what I realized was there's this huge and vibrant alternative media, like people like yourself, other bloggers, other platforms who actually have huge readerships and audiences. And it's like, oh yeah, can have this conversation over here. And if we can infiltrate the old too, great. But in the meantime, let's keep talking to these people who are really engaged and actually are equipped and ready and willing to keep spreading the message among their communities as well. And you know, go through the back door in a way.
Yeah. And also that's such, you know, in any business or anything, anyone who's making anything and sharing it with people is like, okay, looking for essentially what you did is you looked at the old ways. You're like, this is what I think I'm supposed to do. And it didn't work. And then you're like, well, where is the attention actually going? And then you're like, okay, I'm going to put myself in the flow of that stream of attention. And it's funny how our streams of attention are that currency. And we're shifting that currency into these alternative platforms and into these alternative ways. And who knows what the heck it'll be created out of this.
Exactly. And I do think, I mean, I think that younger generations, I don't know how old you are, sorry, but like younger generations than me. Yeah, so younger generations than us, right, are growing up in a world where that kind of instant access and that ability to share and to use their voices is, it feels like, I mean, it's all of our birthright, but it feels like it's evidently more of their birthright. They've had that technology at their fingertips from like second nature, exactly. Yeah. And they're growing up into a world that is, let's face it, not working on so many levels,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And are not going to be, they're not thinking, yeah, I've got another 10 years to go, burn the fossil fuels. They're thinking, this is my planet, this is my future, this is my children's future. No. So I do think that there's this movement can only, sorry, it makes me really emotional too, but this movement can only really grow exponentially, you know?
I feel you. I totally feel you. Yeah. Let's just take a minute to let that. Oh, I have like tingles. I love this. I feel inspired in this moment to share with listeners, to encourage them to write that blog post or like share that thing they've been wondering if it's good enough, or make that art or whatever. Because like that's part of what has been, we've been programmed to believe isn't valuable, is the art or the sharing. Exactly. And like that's actually what's most valuable, is the way you channel your experience into that and share it, and now that, and weave this web. And
yeah. I always know it's a good interview if I end up crying. I've got my moon's in Cancer. I can't help it. And the sun just moved into Cancer today as well. So I'm obviously like,
I know. And I was tearing up when I was talking. I was like, it's big though, because that's why you and I and other people who do similar things do what we do, is like, we're not driven by the profits. Like, yeah, I love profits. I'll take profits because I know mm-hmm. that in my hands, I'm going to do amazing things with them versus that's in the Koch exactly. brothers' hands, right?
Yes.
So like, exactly. yeah, love that.
Yeah.
But we're motivated by this like unknown force calling us forward of like, just take the next step. And we're like, exactly. okay.
Follow, like I kind of touched on when I said like how I chose astrology, but follow as my kind of like passion project, follow what it is that makes you feel the most alive. That's a quote that's in my book, actually. It's a Howard Thurman quote. I don't know if you know it, but it's a favorite of mine. He says, the civil rights activist, Howard Thurman, he says, do not ask yourself what the world needs. Mm. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and do that, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And I think that's such a spiritual statement. Like, what is it that makes you come alive but your spirit, your life force, you know?
Yes, exactly. I love that quote. And that's...
Yeah.
I'm like, mm. So what is it about astrology that makes you come alive?
Well, I talk about this slightly in my book as well. I think I grew up in a completely non-religious household. Like, there was never any kind of like spiritual dogma in my house. And as much as I appreciate and still appreciate the freedom that's given me to kind of like define to come up with my own definition or connection to my spirituality, there was never any conversation really about that as like when I was a kid. And I think that even as a young child, learning that I was an Aries and I'd been born in the year of the dragon, it just connected me to this idea of something great, that I was part of something greater than myself and part of something I couldn't see, but that something that had been chosen for me, or that I had somehow chosen to be part of. So yeah, I think that for me, astrology, it's just one of those things that it works for me as a language to explain that kind of mystical connection, or to explain the parts of my existence and the experiences I'm having on an emotional, spiritual level that, again, like I can't see or can't necessarily put into other words. It helps me just make sense of my larger path and journey. And ours, collectively, mm-hmm. you know, I love looking at the astrology of kind of the earth, like what's going on collectively for all of us, you know, and kind of looking at the patterns and the cycles. It just kind of helps to explain things really and put things into context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you said, you know, you were born into this time, whether you chose it or whatever way you got here, this is the sort of pattern and energy imprint you were born into. And I think something about astrology that, as you were talking about it, this just kind of like flashed in my mind is I think most of my listeners are probably pretty heavy into it. They're not like doubters, you know, but you know, my husband, I'm from a science background and my husband is a scientist, and we talk about this a lot. And one thing is that's I find fascinating is that people have almost forgotten that, yeah, we live in a cosmic place, in a universe. We live in a, first of all, we have our little neighborhood, the solar system, and then we have our galaxy and the universe.
Yeah.
And of course, all of these other created living beings, the planets, the stars, the sun, our sun, the black holes, they're all influencing us on some level. And we've forgotten that. And astrology is the age old study of observations of how are we in relationship with these different beings, and how do they influence us and we influence them. And living universe. We're in a living universe.
And it's, I mean, I guess, you know, it can be that if we spend too much time thinking about that, then we do sort of, it can feel kind of overwhelming, I suppose, for some people, like having those questions left unanswered, like why are we here and what is the earth. That can be that can freak some people out too.
Definitely.
Like, so I can totally understand the need, the desire and the need to create ways to kind of live and exist within that, of course. But at the same time, yeah, let's not get so unbalanced that that's all we focus on and we forget to appreciate and to interact with the mystical unknown parts of our existence.
Right. And in that, like, I think astrology is super interesting. I've actually never had a full reading done, which I think I should.
Oh, you must. Yes, I must.
So I think I'll do that. But then I honor it as the way that our ancestors have put together these observations and carried mm-hmm. through this system that can help us live our day-to-day lives and say, like, this may or may not be true for you today. Stay tuned, see what's showing up, and this might help explain why this is happening and how you can move through it with more ease. Like,
yes, exactly.
Here you go.
Exactly. Astrology is an entire self-help practice. It's nice. Just like a way to have a conversation with myself about things that are going on and just kind of like, yeah, like I said before, just kind of like make sense of things and make sense of other people. My friends, the Astro Twins, who mm-hmm. taught me how to read a birth chart, they describe astrology as a tool for radical forgiveness, which I really, really love.
Wow.
And which is not saying that, you know, oh, you can kind of like blame things on astrology and, you know, not be held accountable
right.
for things.
Which that's my husband's main objection to it.
Yeah, right. And I can understand that as well. That's like, there's unscrupulous ways to use all of these practices and philosophies, I guess. But it's more a question of, I think, isn't it? I haven't actually read the Four Agreements, but one of Don Miguel Ruiz's Four Agreements is don't take anything personally, meaning the Four Agreements mm-hmm. for kind of like living your best life or mm-hmm. Don't take anything personally. And astrology really helps me with that because it really helps me to appreciate that as much as we're all human beings having this, sharing this experience together, we all have a very different perspective. We all have our unique individual perspective. And the less we can kind of like take things personally and get offended by the way other people are acting, the more we can focus on just kind of being who we want to be, and allowing them be who they are and not letting it kind of like not getting bogged down in the, you know, all the kind of competitive, silly stuff that we can get so caught up with sometimes.
Right. Which are all rooted in that separation illusion.
Separation. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're all unique and individual and yet all connected and one. See, mysteries. They're just everywhere.
Paradoxes abound.
Oh, I love it.
Uh-huh. Wow. So I'm curious, what has been really... and it could be something within astrology, it could be something totally different, but what has been really capturing your attention these days and getting you like super fired up?
So the book writing process kind of from start to finish has been about 2 years of my life really. Mm-hmm. And that's, I didn't really realize until coming out of it how much time and attention that had been taking up for me. So the Numinous, my website is really capturing my attention right now. And I'm feeling very, very passionate. And this is not obviously super mystical or fun tool, but for your listeners, but I'm feeling very, very passionate about really reaching back into my old kind of like magazine and consumer and brand world and starting some conversations with people there about like, how can we put some really kind of like consciousness raising content out into the world? How can we actually start having bigger conversations around this? So I'm feeling really passionate about that, which is good. In terms of wellness practices and these kinds of things, I think I'm really looking forward to, I'm going to an island festival called Obonjan in Croatia from August 19th to 24th. We're doing a bit of a Numinous Island takeover and I'll be doing various workshops.
So there's still time to sign up, people.
Oh, plenty of time to sign up for anyone who's in Europe or even not. You don't have to book for the full week. You can just stay for a few nights. It's like a resort that's open all summer and there you have different activities and things happening throughout the summer. All really cool music, workshops, events, etc. But with just the Numinous is just there for those dates. And I'm actually there over the eclipse. I believe they're calling it the Great American Eclipse. It's like the first major eclipse that you're going to be able to go see through across the whole of the United States in like decades. I'm not sure of the exact dates, but we'll be there for the Leo new moon and doing a special ceremony on the island that night. So I'm really excited about that and just kind of sharing in that cosmic event. That it's one of the biggest astrological events of the century so far. So I'm really excited to be in such a kind of like magical place as Croatia, on an island in the middle of the ocean, celebrating that. So that's something to be excited about. And I also have a retreat coming up for anyone in America who doesn't want to travel that far, July 21st to 23rd in upstate New York. And it's in conjunction with a healing center here called Maha Rose. They have a space, Maha Rose North, near Woodstock. So we're just doing a weekend-long deep dive. When I say we, it's a colleague of mine, Alexandra Roxo, and I. It's called the Moon Magic Retreat, but it's going to be a weekend-long deep dive into moon sign astrology and as it relates to your living your soul purpose. That's going to be really fun. What I'm looking forward to is actually kind of getting out from behind my desk and, getting out and interacting some more in the world and having some fun, actually. So, yeah.
Sounds like some amazing nature time is in your future.
Yes, exactly.
Ooh, definitely. And listeners, there's still time to sign up for these if you're listening when this first goes live. And if you're listening later, be sure to check back. Sign up go to the Numinous, get on their mailing list. You can then you can stay in touch with Ruby and her different events throughout all of space and time.
Yeah, we tend to have events happening most weeks these days. There's always something new and fun coming up.
Cool. And so one thing I want to touch on, and you never know where these conversations will go, but now I've been inspired to ask this is, obviously the stars and planets are nature, and you've talked a little bit about your connection with nature, sort of hinting here and there, but I'm wondering what keeps you rooted here in the planet on Earth, and like, what is your relationship like with nature, especially living in the city?
Yeah, I mean, I live in such an urban jungle. Yeah. And it's interesting. I grew up in this very, very rural environment in the county of Suffolk on the east coast of England. And we lived in a teeny, tiny village that was on a river. And it was very, like I said, very rural, very kind of like, it's some farmland, but very wild in a way. Mm. And so I spent most of my kind of formative years like running around barefoot outside, I guess. I knew the names of every plant in the hedgerows and had all my little kind of like imaginary fairy friends in the garden. And like, so that was very me. And I grew up there with my mom. My dad lived in the city in London. And when I was like 9, my mom decided she wanted to move back to London so we could be closer to our dad. And I remember being so excited because to me, the city had this kind of like glamorous allure that I was really fascinated by. And I've always really identified as very much a city person. When I'm in the city, I don't crave, a lot of New Yorkers will go out every weekend and I don't find myself craving it at all. And it's actually only when I get into nature that I'm reminded how restorative and how incredible it feels to actually be able to be out in nature. This weekend, for example, I'm going out to the Wanderlust Yoga Festival in Vermont. And I've just been thinking about, what am I going to do? And I'm like, I'm not going to sign up for a ton of yoga classes. I think I'm just going to actually walk to the top, get the ski lift up to the top of the mountain where it is, and just kind of spend some time actually just being outside. So, I'm very passionate about my career. And so I do spend a lot of time kind of in my home office, like interacting with my machines, and I can forget. So I have to remind myself to actually get out into nature. Yeah.
Interesting that you came from that background running around outside and you're just straight up a city girl. That's how
I know. It is interesting. Yeah. I love being in the city. I just love the energy of the city, and I love the way it feels. I feel so connected to people, and who knows, it might change as I get older, I guess. For now, I still identify as a city chick.
Right. And the city is its own being in nature in its own sense. And, you know, some people vibe with that and some people don't. And that's, you know, I love it. I love it. I have a, I grew up part time in New York City and part time in like, on the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. And so I have this like eternal internal conflict of wanting to live in the city and in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Wow.
So you're lucky you got this like solid city essence. You're like, this is it.
I think for my daily existence.
Cool. And I want to give a huge thank you to our mutual girlfriend, Victoria Keene, who we mentioned a little bit while back in the beginning, who's a conscious business owner and clothing creatrix. And she connected us. So thank you, Victoria.
Thank you, Victoria. We love you.
We love you. You're amazing. And definitely, listeners, if you want to check out Victoria's high vibe, psychedelic, consciously made sweatshop free clothing, go to victoriakeen.com. Yes. And I'll also put a link in the show notes so anyone can check that out.
And she also, for anyone who's in LA, she does regular sound bath sessions at Women's Space in Culver City, which are just like out of this world. She's an incredible sound artist. I think of her as an artist. She's a multidisciplinary artist. So she makes these amazing textiles, many of which she's now dyeing with flowers, and they're just so beautiful. And then she does this incredible sound healing too, which is something that she's actually in my book in the feature on crystals, on the section on crystals. And I describe her as my favorite witchy science geek, because she can get really into like the science of why crystals actually work. And she's just the most fascinating person to speak to. She seems to know everything about everything.
Yeah.
She's a Gemini, of course. But yeah, she's incredible.
Yeah. I'm like, when do you sleep, Victoria?
I know, because she has two kids. Like, she's just like, makes all this amazing stuff. She's always traveling. Like, she just took her 1-year-old daughter on like a textile trip to Guatemala. I'm like, Victoria, you're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
She constantly amazes me.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you, Victoria. And we mentioned a little bit about what you're offering in the near future as far as workshops and amazing trips. And I'm curious, for our listeners, where else can they find you? Obviously, thenumanist.com, and go buy her book. It's online. It's in bookstores. Go buy it. Go ask your bookstores to stock it.
Yes, please. That would be great. More indie stockists would be really, really cool.
Demand
it. It's called Material Girl, Mystical World. And there is also an audiobook, which I read. And it's been really nice, actually. A lot of my old friends, particularly my friends in the UK I don't get to hang out with now, like, I got the audiobook and it's like having a conversation with you. So yeah, the book is kind of like an introduction to so many of these different subjects, but it really gets pretty deep pretty fast. A lot of people, I think, have been surprised. It's got this really bright pink, fun cover, and then you get inside and it's like, wow, going deep. So yeah, the book's kind of,
you gotta lure them in, you know.
Yes, exactly. And so the numinist is actually the-numinist.com. My Instagram too, I'm pretty active on Instagram, the_numinist, and that's where you can, most of my events go on the Instagram, but also we send them out on our weekly newsletter, which you can sign up for at the site also.
Beautiful. And I'll put links in all the show notes, and
thank you.
Everyone can rock and roll with that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you. And, you know, something we like to do here is sort of silly, sort of, well, really fun, but sort of silly, is secret episodes. And it's they're just quick little ones that maybe reveal something a little different than what we talk about in the main interview. And I'm wondering, do you have something, would you be willing to do one? And then also, do you have an idea of what you would want to dive into? Or do you want the wild card?
Maybe we should just do a wild card. Yeah, I'm down to do one for sure.
All right.
I think we should just do a wild card.
All right, wild card. All right, listeners, so you can check her out the wild card, what will we talk about? Who knows? Ooh. And that's dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret. And also you can find the show notes, everybody, on dreamfreedombeauty.com, and just look up Ruby, like the gemstone, of course, and her episode will pop up. So Ruby Warrington, go get her book, Material World Mystical. No, see, I always do that. I always do that. Material Girl, Mystical World. But you know what? If you search those words, it'll come up.
Yes, exactly. I love it.
All right. Well, thank you, Ruby, for everything.
Thank you so much, Natalie. It's been really lovely chatting to you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. You can get the free secret episode at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret. And there's a lot of amazing secret episodes in there. And if you enjoyed the show and you're a new listener, I would like to invite you to subscribe and check out some of our other shows. I know that there are other guests that I've interviewed that you will love if you loved this interview. I also want to send a huge, beautiful thank you once again to Stina Sweezy of Mother Mountain Herbals for her amazing contribution to Dream Freedom Beauty, where she has taken this vision that started while I was sitting next to a willow tree and put this vision into form to give us our new logo that you're seeing on your iTunes or Android podcast app or wherever you might find us online. So thank you, Stina. I love you. I'm so grateful for you. Thank you. And I hope everyone has an amazing week full of so many fantastic synchronistic blessings. I'll see you next week with another amazing interview.